just completed his career as a Bulldog player. Now he's ready to begin his new career as a Bulldog coach. Born in Indianapolis, despite the fact his parents lived in Alabama, he returned to what technically was his native city to play college basketball at Butler, and completed his career as the school's single-season assist record holder and a two-time Defensive Player of the Year award winner. He no doubt could have continued his playing career somewhere on a professional level, but he's known since high school that he wanted to coach, and he will, having already accepted the head varsity position at Brownsburg High School. Their nickname might be the same as Butler's, but it promises to be a completely different experience. But then he's faced more difficult challenges. I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm going one-on-one with Ronald Norred.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions, they make your memories last forever.
Okay, today One-on-One comes to you from the Showcase Studio at MS Communications. Never done a show from here, so this is a first-time experience, and we are here with Butler's Ronald Norred. And Ronald, I know you got a great story to tell. We're going to jump into it. Strangely enough, you were born in Indianapolis, but not raised in Indianapolis. So explain that for us.
Yeah, my mom grew up in Indianapolis and graduated from Shortridge High School, and her side of the family is still here in Indy, has been here for many, many years. So I think once she had me, she hadn't been in Alabama too long, my dad pastoring down there. So she decided that, you know, she trusted the people at Methodist where she worked. And so she wanted to come back up here and have me with the people she trusted.
So she just came up here, what, like a week or two before you were born or something like that?
Yeah, and we only stayed here for about a week, and then we were right back down to Alabama.
How about, well, I was born at Methodist Hospital, so there's something we have in common.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, a lot of people here were born at Methodist because at one time that was just about the only hospital. But so you were raised kind of just outside of Birmingham, Alabama, right?
I was.
And your dad was a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
What was your sports upbringing like? I mean, were you involved in athletics at a very young age?
I was. You know, a lot of people like to talk about, you know, basketball players and past basketball players. I didn't grow up watching much sports. I was actually just discussing this with some roommates the other day. You know, my brother and I grew up like watching cartoons and things, never really watched sports, but my dad was a college baseball player at Lane College. And so baseball was our first thing, and he got us playing baseball early. I started playing baseball in kindergarten. In second grade, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try out this basketball thing, which is pretty, you know, it's rare in Alabama to be basketball is, you know, your sport. But I gave it a shot. I wasn't that great at it, but I liked it, so I just kept playing. And then in fifth grade, I took on football. And I think my mom's a little scared. My dad probably was a little scared as well, but ended up being pretty good at football, so I played all three of those sports until seventh grade. Seventh grade, I made the baseball team, and I quit for basketball. And then after my eighth grade year of football, I decided that would be my last year of football and ended up just basketball starting in ninth grade.
Now, how did your parents meet? If your mom's from Indianapolis, your dad is he from Alabama?
From Tennessee.
From Tennessee. So how did they meet?
My dad's a pastor, was a pastor, and my mom's sister is a pastor, both in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. My mom's dad was an elder in the AME church, and my grandmother, my mom's mom, was the women's missionary president. And the African Methodist Episcopal Church is a big connectional church all over the country and in a few countries in Africa, and I think maybe Europe as well. And so at General Conference, which is when, you know, everyone comes together every 4 years, I think my aunt had known my dad a little bit and just decided that he might be pretty good for my mom. And so it ended up working out pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you start playing basketball, organized basketball, and you say you weren't very good at first?
I was awful.
Yeah. Did you have any embarrassing moments as a kid playing basketball?
You know, I had a lot. I think just not being very good was embarrassing in general, but, you know, I was pretty fast. I was one of the fastest in our league. And I was pretty good getting steals and things like that. So I would steal it from a guy. I would race all the way. I beat everybody down the floor. I would do this like monster jump stop at the free throw line. You know, you're taught to jump stop. So I did mine at the free throw line. I would wait for everyone to run past me, which was not a good idea. And I would just kind of throw it at the rim. Sometimes I hit the rim, sometimes I hit nothing, sometimes I hit the bottom of the backboard. But growing up, I can remember my friends just recalling so many times where I'd be in front of everybody and I, for some reason, just couldn't, I shot it too late and I always hit the bottom of the backboard and go out of bounds.
You wouldn't like take it to the rim and lay it in, you would stop and then throw it up there.
Yeah. I don't know why I did that. I do have that on tape and it's pretty funny to see.
So your embarrassing moments were during the game in the course of play.
Yeah, when I was little. I think the only, you know, in middle school I had an embarrassing moment, which it wasn't really that embarrassing. It ended up being kind of sad, but at our middle school gym, it has rails and it has one side and the court's below the rail. Well, they had trash cans right in front of the rail. So I had some friends that were just watching the game. And it was my first game back off an ankle injury in middle school. I had missed like 3 games, which is a huge deal in middle school, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they tried to shoot their drink into the trash can and completely missed. Well, there's ice, there's water all over the floor, and I had no idea whatsoever. So, you know, I'm just dribbling down the floor. People apparently were yelling at me saying, "Ryan, you got to stop, you got to stop." Well, I just kept on going. Next thing you know, I've slipped my legs out from under me, and I end up hitting the back of my head. But I was so embarrassed because I literally was the only player on the court in the gym that did not know that there was ice and water on the floor.
Okay, that's good. That's good stuff. That's, you know, it's good for people to hear that even really successful players go through those kind of moments as well. You know?
We all struggle.
Yeah, absolutely, especially when you first start out. So, you know, you played other sports. You played football, played some baseball. Was basketball your favorite sport most of the time growing up, or was it really something else?
Honestly, I think football was probably my favorite. I loved football. Growing up in Alabama and being a football player is a pretty big deal. And, you know, I don't really like to talk about myself very much, but I was a and I can say this now because I don't play anymore. I was a pretty good football player.
You're a running back?
I was a running back. And, you know, as a middle schooler, I had 25 total touchdowns between 2 years. I just loved football. And the excitement in my town for football was amazing. My freshman and sophomore year, we won the state championship. We also won the state championship my 7th grade year and my 5th grade year. So we were really – our football program in my town of Homewood was really, really good. I just decided when I got to high school that I loved basketball even more. Football is still one of my favorite sports. You know, basketball obviously is my favorite. I'm a huge Alabama football fan, but football had been, you know, my true love for the first few years I played it.
But you just figured out basketball was your better sport when you got to high school? Or
I just thought it's what I wanted to do when I got to college.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily agree with selecting one sport and going with that, but it's just what I decided to do. It ended up working out pretty well for me. But I just loved basketball. I loved my coach. I loved, you know, the guys I was playing basketball with. I liked the direction we were going, and just decided that that's what I wanted to do.
Let's talk about your dad. He was a pastor at the church down there. From what I'm gathering, he was hugely popular down there, mm-hmm. and respected. He wrote a book, right?
Mm-hmm, he did.
And you're on the cover of it?
A few books.
But a few books.
Right. I was on the cover of one of them.
And what were those books about?
The first one was called Reweaving the Fabric, and it was about how my dad pastored a church called Bethel African Methodist Episcopal in a town called Inslee that used to be this big booming town that had a steel mill. The steel mill eventually shut down and the town just kind of went bad. And my dad ended up being selected to preach at a church in that town. And he wanted really to affect the community in a positive way. And so he started doing all these positive things. And then that affected the church in a positive way. And then the whole town just kind of wrapped around the church. The church wrapped themselves around the town. So it was just kind of about that process and some of the things that he saw during those times. He also wrote a book called Behind the Walls and just sort of talked about the church in general. And I actually never read Behind the Walls, and I've only read a little bit of Reweaving the Fabric. I actually plan to get around to that pretty soon here. But he was just a really awesome guy that had just this amazing vision to do a lot of really good things for other people, for the community around the church, for the church in general, and for Christ. And, you know, those books were part of that vision.
Mm-hmm. Are these books that people could get today still?
They are. Yeah, they are still available to buy.
Amazon.com?
Amazon.com has Reweaving the Fabric. I don't think Behind the Walls ever made it to that level. It was kind of more of a local publication, but Reweaving the Fabric is still available on Amazon.com. You can, in fact, read the first like 6 pages of the book on Amazon.com.
Right. Yeah. NORAD experiences tragedy when One-on-One continues.
Welcome back to One-on-One. I'm Mark Monteith, talking today with Butler's Ronald Norred. He had to overcome the loss of his father when he was in the eighth grade, but he went on to lead his high school team to the final game of the state tournament in Alabama. Think it took some strength to do that?
Had your dad been an athlete?
He was, yeah. He was a college baseball player, and that was he was also a boxer. He boxed growing up in Tennessee. He was one of the top boxers in the state of Tennessee. He lost one match his whole career.
Okay.
And was a huge. He was only about 5'8", but just a really stocky, huge guy in his prime.
Now, your father, however, died of pancreatic cancer when you were in eighth grade.
He did. Went through a one-year battle with pancreatic cancer. Started in a football season and ended in eighth grade football season. It was really, really difficult time for our family. Really difficult time for, you know, me personally being a eighth grader, a 13-year-old. You know, you want at that time of your life, that's, you know, when your dad is really important, because there's a lot of things that you're learning. You're growing up and you have a lot of questions about life, about, you know, the way things are going to go from here on out. And to not have that was really odd. Yeah. And was really sad for us. But, you know, now I look at it as a learning. I went through just a huge learning curve through that. And, you know, I can look back and say it was an experience that has changed my life positively. I look at his life and celebrate his life. And, you know, I'm no longer sad. I can talk to you all day about my dad and the things that we went through as a family, just because I've learned so much from that experience.
Yeah. How old was he at the time?
43.
Mm-hmm. How do you avoid becoming bitter about something like that happening?
At first I kind of was, to be honest with you. You know, our family is huge in our faith. And at first I was like, God, how can you do this? You know, how could a guy that is, you know, bringing your word to your people every single day, how can he be the one that you take away? And really didn't see the bigger picture. And through going to church and, you know, experiencing some different things in church and understanding our faith more and understanding people more, you know, we all live and we all die. You know, it's just, when is it our time? My dad did so many great things in those 43 years. You know, I spoke at All Pro Dads Brownsburg the other day and told him about how my dad was such a good dad that he prepared me for life even after he died. And that's a tremendous impact. If you're not even living anymore and you still have that kind of impact on the person your kids are gonna be or the person, the people you're around are gonna be, you know, you did a lot of really good things, and he was one of those people.
So it was about a year-long process, you say, for him when he found out that he had it? And
it was, and, kind of and my mom actually told our whole church congregation, you know, a few months or weeks, I can't remember exactly how long it was, that the doctors told him he was only going to live 6 months, and he ended up knocking out six more, yeah. Which doesn't surprise me. That's the kind of guy my dad was.
Is there like a, I don't mean to sound morbid, but is there like a deathbed moment? Do you have a chance to say goodbye? That type of thing?
You do. We actually at our house, he stayed at our house and we had someone come in. So he was there the whole time, yeah. You know, throughout the last few moments. You know, I actually was not at home when he passed away. He passed away in the night or early in the morning, and I was sleeping at a friend's house after a Friday night football game. And, you know, somebody picked me up from home and brought me home, and my mom was waiting there and told us that he had passed away. But my mom did talk to us a few days prior to then and, you know, got the opportunity to go and say our last goodbyes. My mom told us he wouldn't be able to respond, but he could still hear us. And so it was obviously a sad time, and, you know, I look back on it and it still is pretty sad to even think about.
Now, you spent a lot of time in Indianapolis, right? As a kid, because you had relatives up here.
Right.
And you used to ride your bike around Butler's campus.
Did that a lot. My brother and I would get bored here in Indy at my grandparents' house. And, you know, we kind of got tired of kind of sitting around. So we always had bikes around. Butler is literally 4 blocks away from my grandmother's house. And so we would ride to Butler. Didn't really know Butler. We just kind of rode through. You know, I can still think about riding past Atherton Union, which is our student union. You know, as I walk down there, I can think about when I actually rode past. I can think of how I viewed Butler at that time, being just, you know, whatever I was, 10, 11, 12 years old. We went down to the canal, which we thought was just the coolest thing ever, because there was just a body of water that was there. I think we illegally swam in the water. And now thinking about that, it's pretty gross that we did that. But, yeah. You know, we went in the water and we just had a lot of good times just coming around Butler. I got the opportunity to go to Hinkle, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, was this always in the summers when you're up here visiting?
It was in the summers. We came during spring break sometimes, so just a little bit of every year we did.
So you never went to a Butler basketball game as a kid?
My first Butler basketball game was when I played my freshman year in our exhibition game.
Okay. So as a kid, are you even thinking, God, it'd be cool to go to school here or something like that? I mean,
never even crossed my mind. Butler was just a place in Indianapolis to me, honestly. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't even a school. Like, it wasn't even a place where I thought that people really were. You know, I knew it was a college, but it wasn't. It was just Butler. Butler was just there. It was part of Indianapolis, you know, from my experiences. And it was really ironic when I got a call from Coach Stevens discussing Butler and talking about Butler, because I had grown up just being around Butler a lot.
Now, I've heard the story that you once went inside Hinkle Field House to shoot around and Brad had to kick you out.
I did. I was a ninth grader. And again, it was just kind of one of those trips to Butler, and I just wanted to go shoot. My uncle actually worked in Butler. He was a custodian at Butler at the time, and so he would let me in from time to time at Hinkle, and you know, I just wanted to go shoot. So I went in the West Gym and shot, and you know, next thing I know, this little guy with glasses comes on in and says, you know, we're not allowed to have you in the gym right now. And he officially kicked me out. That was my first encounter with Coach Stevens.
So you weren't even in the main arena, you were in the like intramural gym.
Yeah,
or whatever,
I was in the West Gym on
there.
The side, yeah.
Why couldn't you be there?
Because it was the dead period. It was July. And so no athletes, no, you know, high school players are allowed to be, you know, on the campuses or in the facilities at that time.
So you were kind of regarded as a recruit then.
Right, I was, even though Butler hadn't even thought twice about me, or any school for that matter.
Yeah, boy, that's ironic. That's really something. Let's talk about your high school career. You played on state championship team, right?
Well, we lost in the state championship.
Okay,
yeah.
Final
yeah.
game?
Yeah, we lost in that final game.
Okay. How big is high school basketball in Alabama? Not as big as football.
It's not even anywhere close to football. And it's a lot different than Indiana. It's really hard to explain just because I've been so exposed to Indiana high school basketball for the last few years. You know, there are certain places that care more than others. You know, as with anything, you know, I think it just depends on the school. You know, yeah. It depends where you are. It's not the biggest thing, but it's not, you know, people aren't just completely apathetic to it either.
Uh-huh. How many classes do they have in Alabama?
There are six classes in Alabama for all sports.
Wow.
There's actually seven if you include the independent school. So there's independent school class, and then we have 1A through 6A.
Seven different state championships then in Alabama.
There are.
What your school, what division were
we were
you
in? We were in 6A. We were one of the smaller 6A schools. My first 2 years of high school, we were 5A. We moved up to 6A my junior and senior year. And actually next year, they'll be going back down to 5A.
So, but 6A is the large school division.
6A is the largest. We were one of the smallest in the 6A.
Okay. Well, that had to be a great experience, though, getting to the final game.
It was. It was only the second time that Homewood has ever had a team reach the Final Four, the Alabama High School Final Four. So to be a part of that with 11 seniors and one junior was a pretty special thing, just because we knew we were pretty good. We knew we had a chance to be good. We weren't the quickest, fastest, most athletic, best players, but we really had been playing together since we were all in third grade, and we struck this common bond, and you know, we're really able to play like a team and get to that point and end up losing to a team that we had beat once already and lost to once already.
How did you play in that final game?
The final game, I played okay. Not great. I actually didn't have a very good Final Four and final game. I only had 4 points in the Final Four and fouled out, and my teammate hit this unbelievable game-winning shot. And then in the final game, I struggled a little bit when we were down, and as we were coming back, I started playing a little better, but obviously not good enough to finish the deal.
As you look back on it now, were you like nervous? Were you just too uptight? Or
no, I don't think, you know, I don't think that was it. I think, you know, we just didn't play well. Yeah. You know, I actually have the film saved, they videoed it, and I have that saved on my computer to this day. And I was just noticing we did not play well. We turned the ball over. We made, you know, bad plays. And I'm not sure. I don't know how my other teammates felt, but I was fine.
Yeah. Do you go back and watch it occasionally, huh?
I do. I only watched the third quarter, though, because that's it. We were down big, and we made this really cool comeback and cut it to like 4 points, and then they went on a run to win it. But just the excitement that I remember from that time, and I still get excited watching it to this day, just the things that we did to come back.
NORED chooses a college, and it's not Butler. Not at first, anyway, when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, I'm Mark Monteith. Rotto Norred attracted plenty of attention from college recruiters back in high school, one of whom was Butler's Brad Stevens. But Stevens had to wait to catch his point guard on the rebound.
So tell me about your recruiting experience. How many schools did you hear from? Who all did you visit? All that kind of thing out of high school.
I ended up having 16 offers coming out of high school while I was still in high school. And you know, the recruiting was fun for a really long time. There were times where I would turn my cell phone off and not even, you know, want to touch it, just because, you know, sometimes it gets kind of hard to live when people are just calling you over and over and over again. Yeah. I'm super thankful that I got to go through it and that I had so many opportunities. I ended up taking just a few unofficial visits. I took one to South Alabama. I actually was playing a tournament in Atlanta and took one to Georgia State. I only took one official visit, and it was after I had committed to Western Kentucky already. You know, despite having a lot of good offers, despite having a call from Brad Stevens, I knew that Western Kentucky at the time was the place that I wanted to go. Just their coaches, the way that they interacted with me, the university, you know, I was going to go study journalism, broadcast journalism, which they were really, really good in. And I decided that that was the best place for me. It was only 3.5 hours away from Birmingham. So I committed and signed to Western Kentucky. And then Western Kentucky, my senior year, goes on this amazing run and loses to eventual runners-up to UCLA in the Sweet 16. And, you know, their coach decides, Darren Horn decides to go to South Carolina, to take the job at South Carolina, which was surprising to me and kind of upsetting. But I asked to be released from my scholarship at Western, and the athletic director and president were really great helping me out doing that. And, you know, they were fine with that. And I started calling all these schools back. Some answered, some didn't. And, you know, I hadn't had my release yet. So when I called Butler, Coach Stevens didn't pick up. And, you know, after I got my release, he ended up calling my high school coach and saying, you know, we can't talk to Ronald right now because he doesn't have his release yet. But when he gets that done, then we'll be happy to talk to him. Ended up talking to Coach Stevens for a really long time. And I'll never forget that first conversation when we were talking about how great of an opportunity Butler is. And he was saying, you know what, we're not exactly sure where you would fit in yet. We have a really good class coming in, which we had an unbelievable class coming in. And he's like, you know, we might need to redshirt you. We might need to play you 10 to 15 minutes a game. We'll just have to, you know, see where you fit in. And, you know, I told him, I said, Coach Stevens, I don't care if I play. I don't care if I redshirt. I just don't care. I want to be with good people. I want to be at a good university where I can graduate with a great degree and be a part of a really good basketball program. And, you know, at the bare minimum, I knew I was going to get that out of Butler, which I sure did.
Yeah. So before you committed to Western Kentucky, you had heard from Brad, but you didn't take a visit. You really didn't consider it that seriously?
No, I didn't. I think I told him, you know, Western Kentucky is sort of where I'm leaning right now. He called, you know, sort of late in my process, not late in the whole process, but in my process, you know, I had spoken with Western a good number of times by that time and thought that that was the place that I wanted to go.
Did you commit to Western Kentucky like early your senior season?
I actually committed August before school started my senior year.
Okay. And then when did the coach leave to go to South Carolina?
He left in April of my senior year.
So April, you start calling schools back.
Yeah. I started calling everybody. Everybody who gave me a call, I called them right back.
Hoping somebody still has a scholarship, right?
Yeah.
Why did Butler even have a scholarship in April, I wonder, for that following fall? That's kind of unusual.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. That year we had 5 seniors graduate. Okay. And there were only 4 scholarship guys committed in our class. We also had invited walk on one of my best friends, Emerson Campin. And so there was just one more scholarship available.
Who else was in that class that you came in with?
So it was Emerson Campin from Yorktown, Chase DeGaulle from Newcastle, Garrett Butcher from Edgewood, Shelvin Mack from Lexington, some guy who's an okay basketball player named Gordon Hayward, you know, from Brownsburg, and then it was myself. There were six of us. Pretty big class.
So did you commit to Brad just on the phone, or did you come up and take an official visit?
He actually came down to Alabama.
That's right.
It was at a time, yeah, where I just couldn't get up here to Indiana because, you know, I was finishing school, you know, had a lot going on, and Coach Stevens was great enough to come down, and we sat in my high school coach's office on a Saturday morning and talked a good bit, and, you know, he ended up saying, you know what, you do have a scholarship to Butler, and I said, well, sign me up, I will be coming. So that was pretty cool.
So he drove like 500 some miles, yeah, straight through, right?
Straight through, like, yeah, overnight, and then after our meeting went right back.
And if he met with you in the morning, does that mean he drove through the night or something like that? I mean, do you know?
That's a great question. Now that I think about it, I'm not really sure. But he drove the whole 8 hours down, and we sat and met that morning. And, you know, he'll tell you a story. He has a different perspective than I do. He'll tell you the story that he went to this fabulous – he asked where he should go eat. Went to this fabulous restaurant in Homewood called Dimitri's. Great breakfast. And he asked for an omelet with mushrooms. And so the lady said, mustard? And he said, no, mushrooms. Well, they bring his omelet out, and he said he went to take a bite, and it's loaded with mustard. he thinks it's the worst restaurant in the country, when it really, in all reality, is a great restaurant.
They just didn't understand him very well.
That's what I said. They probably didn't understand your Midwestern accent.
Exactly. He wasn't speaking Southern.
That's right.
So you come to Butler. It had to be kind of a familiar feeling for you, having, you had relatives up here, you mm-hmm. knew the campus, obviously, so you must have been pretty comfortable from the start.
I was. You know, the thing that I didn't know was I did not know any of my teammates. Didn't know one guy, never met him, honestly never really heard of him, minus, you know, Matt Howard, who had played a lot of minutes that year. They actually played the second round of the tournament that year in Birmingham.
Okay.
So I got to see Butler practice that year. That was the year that they lost to Tennessee in the round of 32, mm-hmm. In overtime. And so I was really familiar with Mike Green and just loved Mike Green and loved AJ Graves and some of those guys, but I didn't know anybody on my team. So that's not very good going into college, playing college basketball, because those are guys you spend a lot of time with. I was obviously blessed enough to have really good teammates. Gordon, Shelvin, and I, you know, as three freshmen, we all started every single game that year, all 32 games. And it was really, really cool, you know, to be just thrown in the fire like that and see what was going to happen. Words can't tell you how nervous I was that first exhibition game even, and how fast the game was that first.
Yeah.
I mean, the level is just completely different. You know, it doesn't matter what level you played on up to that point. It just completely different, and it was cool to be a part of that and be thrown in that away.
Who was that first exhibition game against?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it was Marion. Okay. It was either Marion or Taylor.
Okay, did you do okay?
Did okay. Yeah. Did okay.
Are you as nervous as you were?
Oh, yeah, I did all right.
Because in high school, you'd averaged, I think I have this right, like 15.3 points, 6.9 rebounds, mm-hmm. 5.2 assists, so you had a complete game, and you obviously weren't a player who was going to rely on scoring to be effective, so that kind of has to help you, you know.
Right. Yeah, sure. My game, especially like in AAU, you know, I played on a really good team, had a McDonald's All-American on my AAU team, you know, had a few guys that are going that played at Alabama, a guy that's at Wichita, you know, guys that, you know, a guy that he was at Oregon, guy that was at IU and now is at Ole Miss. So we had a really good team, and, you know, I knew that my role on that team would reflect my role in college, to kind of be a setup guy, be a team leader, be a stopper. And so I had already played that role, even though my role in high school was to score the most, you know, score the most for our team, make the most plays. You know, I knew that in college I'd be prepared to kind of be the facilitator, distributor, because I had done that for many years in AAU.
Brad, I've talked to Brad for this show a couple times, and he's kind of known for having, what, 6 a.m. practices?
Yeah, we had some early ones.
You like that?
Yes and no. The waking up part's tough. And the cold part is really tough in the winter. Those are tough to wake up to, go in the freezing cold. You know, you have to, at 5:30 or at 5 o'clock, you know, you have to scrape ice off your car and snow off your car. Those weren't fun. But the great thing about it was we could go in, we could focus, we could have a nice practice. Nothing has bothered us at that point in the day besides waking up and then we're done for the day.
Right.
You know, you practice, you go to class, and you're done for the day. So it was nice to just have that time at the end of the day just to kind of recuperate.
Yeah, it actually makes a lot of sense. Like you say, you know, once your classes are done, you are done for the day, and you can focus on academics the rest of the day. But the getting up part, you know, some people are morning people and some people are not.
Yeah, you know. Coach Stevens was about the only morning person in the program.
So he loved it.
Yeah, he loved it. Oh, yeah.
And it's great for the coaches because they can go recruit or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, in the afternoon or make, you know, drive someplace.
So exactly.
That worked out great. And you had your grandmother close by, so that helps.
She's really nice for meals, for laundry. I took my laundry to her house, you know, my first 3 years of college and did it there religiously. And, you know, got the opportunity to have some really good cooked meals. My teammates also enjoy those. And, you know, just having family close is really important. Another really cool thing about my grandparents being on 40th Street, and I live on 40th, is that when my mom came, she got to stay with her mom.
Yeah.
And got to spend time with her mom, her dad, her, you know, brothers and sisters. And to have her really close to me as well, you know, not having to stay in a hotel or pay for a hotel, really just getting to stay with her parents is a really cool thing.
When you were a kid, like in high school, before you were being recruited, did you have a favorite college program?
No, I was a North Carolina fan. I went to North Carolina basketball camp the summer after sixth grade. And like Coach Doherty was there, Matt Doherty. And honestly, they weren't very good. But, you know, I was just obsessed with those players. I was obsessed with everything North Carolina. And so I wanted to go play at North Carolina growing up. Yeah.
Do you feel like you were kind of overlooked as a high school recruit being in Alabama? Did you feel like you could have gone to a, you know, so-called major program, Big Ten or ACC or whatever?
You know, I think if I would have waited a little bit longer in the process, I could have. The thing that was important to me as a high school player was not the name, not how big it was, not, you know, those kind of things. I really wanted people that were going to invest in me. That's about the most selfish I've ever been in my life. You know, I wanted to go to a school that was going to be invested in me, was going to have my best interests out. And I thought that those schools that had recruited me early, those schools that had stayed on me, really cared about me, really wanted me because they thought I could be a good piece of their puzzle. And I just wasn't going to be entertained by schools that, you know, I was option B or option C that didn't fit me very well. And so if those options would have come, I probably wouldn't have taken them anyway.
NORAD recalls the agony of those NCAA tournament championship game losses and looks ahead to his next career when One-on-One continues. Back on One-on-One, I'm Mark Monteith. Ronald NORAD played well enough at Butler that he certainly could have continued his playing career somewhere on the professional level, but he knew all along that he'd quit playing when his college career ended and begin coaching. Do you think back now on that Duke game very often?
Not really.
Erase it from your memory well?
No, you know what? I still love that game. I thought we played so well in that game for the most part, and it was a really fun game to be a part of. It stunk that last shot, you know, didn't go in, or that we didn't do some things to not even have to take that last shot to win it. But, you know, we got to play against a really good Duke team with a lot of guys that I respect to this day. And again, getting the opportunity to go that far and, you know, be, you know, the first Butler team to be able to do that in, you know, a really long time, it was a really, really cool experience. And I'm reminded of that game more and more now that I'm at Brownsburg because Gordon and the shot and all those things. So I don't think it's ever going to be able to be erased.
When Gordon's half-court shot is in the air, did you think it was going in or did you have time?
There was no doubt that I thought that ball was going in. I was sitting on the bench, which the bench in the Final Four, you're like 10 feet down, you feel like. Yeah. So I was sort of sitting on the court, and I thought that ball was going in. It was crazy that it didn't.
Yeah. Did you go to class that day?
I did. I went to class that morning. Yeah. Class was a little crazy. People wanted autographs. People wanted pictures. You know, people were walking by just, you know, it was a crazy day for sure. Fun day, but a crazy day.
What's the feeling you have like the night before a national championship game? You're trying to get to sleep, you know, and the day of the national championship game, you
it's
know,
a all long that anticipation. Day.
Yeah.
That's the big, you don't play till 9 o'clock p.m. The night before, that's all that's on your mind. You're just thinking about every little play. You're thinking about your preparation. You're thinking about all the things that you can do to be successful. You know, that stuff's just running through your mind. Sleep is like impossible to get, you know, for both sides of it. It doesn't matter who you are. And I think by that time, you're not even nervous anymore. You're just so focused on your preparation and just so focused on the things that you have to do. It's just really hard to sleep. And then that day is long day, you know, you still go through your pregame meal and your shoot arounds and things like that, but it just, you know, you're not used to playing a 9 p.m. game, so yeah. That's a little different.
What about the Connecticut game the following year?
Oh, that game, that's one that I wish I could erase from my memory. Yeah. You know, the Duke game was, after we lost that, was kind of shocking because we hadn't lost in 3 months. The Connecticut game hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, it hurt to the point of tears for a lot of us. And I think you can look back of any kind of basketball games that have been played, and you won't see many teams that shot 18% for the game.
I know.
We were one of those teams that did. UConn didn't shoot the ball great either.
No.
That game. And so, you know, if we could have done some things better, if we could have attacked, you know, the rim better, finished better, you know, we only made 4 2-point field goals in that game, which is four. Yeah. Total 2-point field goals, which is crazy to think about. And you got to credit UConn and their defense for that. But that game was not a very fun game to play in.
Did you feel as a team, you think, as confident going into that game as you had the year before against Duke?
I was more confident. Yeah. I thought, you know, I slept a little better the second round than I did the first round, obviously, because I was, you know, accustomed to it. But there was no doubt that we were going to win that game in my mind. I just thought with everything that we were going to do, our preparation, I thought there was just no chance we could lose that game.
What was it like as the game progressed and, you know, guys were missing shots? Does it get in guys' head, do you think?
You want to say no, but I think it sort of did, yeah. To be honest with you. And the more that we just kept missing, the harder it got to, you know, be able to knock in those shots. And so that kind of stunk that we had to experience that. And that was kind of our last hurrah for, you know, that tournament was going out like that.
Well, you know, you wind up your career this past season. You are you set a single season assist record at Butler, right? And really on a team that didn't score a lot this past year.
Right.
So that really is an accomplishment.
Thanks.
You are a 2-time Horizon League Defensive Player of the Year. So that tells people about your game. And as we know, you're going to coach at Brownsburg. But did you give any thought to like trying to play overseas or continuing your career?
I knew a few years ago that when I was done my senior year, that'd be the last time that I would play basketball at a high level like this. Now, will I join an old men's league or an over 30s league at some point? Yes, I will. But I knew that, you know, I really wanted to get into coaching.
So you don't think you'll miss playing that much?
I'll miss it at some point. You know, I think I've been so busy with Brownsburg and, you know, finishing up school that I haven't even really given any thought. I know there's going to be times where I'll miss playing. You know, our buddies will still get together a good bit and play, but, you know, to play at that level and, you know, the focus it takes and the amount of preparation and, you know, the amount of things that you have to put your body through, it gets pretty difficult. So I don't think I'm going to miss the pain very much.
Yeah. How would you describe your style? Are you going to be a Brad Stevens clone? Are you going to do some things differently?
I'm a different person than Coach Stevens. I'm a little more fiery than Coach Stevens, but you know, I think it's going to be good to sort of have the same, you know, coaching values and, you know, understanding that you don't have to be emotionally tied into, you know, wins and losses. You know, but just kind of keep that even keel and, you know, treat everything as a learning experience. Whether you win, whether you lose, it's all a learning experience and an opportunity to get better.
Will you have 6 a.m. practices?
We probably will not have 6 a.m. practices.
I don't know if you can do that in high school.
I do not want to get up.
You're in charge now, so you could do maybe some midnight practices, huh?
That'd be fun.
I always thought, like, I could handle midnight practices, but at 6 a.m.
6 a.m., different story, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, in high school, though, you're kind of stuck with the players who are there. You can't go out and recruit anybody to Brownsburg. And Brownsburg's program has been down the past few years. How do you come in and turn things around.
It's going to be about building togetherness, I think. You know, that's something that I've really focused on with the guys that are coming for our open gyms already, is the importance of building togetherness and how this program is going to be a program that is the people in it are there for each other. You know, are doing things for each other, are sacrificing for each other, are serving each other. That's going to be really important, if not the most important piece of it. I think if we do that, we have an opportunity to be good. It's going to be a process. I know it's going to take some time, but, you know, I'm looking forward to that opportunity. I'm looking forward to building that togetherness with those guys.
You're having practices now out there like 3 days a week, 4 days a week as we speak. What kind of things are you doing now in practice?
Well, right now, because of IHSA rules, you know, we can just open the gym for anybody at Brownsburg High School that wants to come. So we're just doing open gyms right now. Where I just go in and I just watch.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun to be able to do that, just to see the guys, you know, see how they're playing, you know, how they interact with one another. You know, we usually have our seniors pick teams and then they just go out and play and the coaches just kind of sit back and watch. So it's a pretty cool thing right now.
But this summer you can coach them, right?
Right. We can do some workouts where we're coaching, where we're, you know, we can put in some things and then we can have the opportunity to go out and play in some summer league. So we'll go to Purdue's team camp this summer. We'll play in some leagues that'll be around here in town as well.
At what age did you think you wanted to become a coach?
The age of 17.
Yeah.
I knew in high school that's what I wanted to do. You know, I went back and forth, but it all came back to coaching.
Yeah. Why?
I love basketball. I love the way the game of basketball works. I love the opportunity to see that work, to, you know, have a vision and put that vision out to a group of guys that are buying into that and watch it work. It's beautiful. You know, some people think art's beautiful. Some people think other things. I think the way the game of basketball works is a beautiful thing. And, you know, to get the opportunity to be a part of that from a coaching standpoint is really, really cool. So I always came back to that. I wanted to lead a group. I wanted to be, you know, with young men and be able to influence them in a positive way. So I think all those factors have, you know, led me to want to be a coach.
Do you eventually want to be part of a college program, or can you see yourself being a high school coach forever?
I can see myself being one of those 60-year-old high school coaches where I'm saying, you know, back in 2012 when I took the Brownsburg head coaching job, this and this was going on. But, you know, I think for the right opportunity, you know, and maybe at some point if it came about, you know, being a college coach would be something that I would weigh. Yeah. And, you know, I love Brownsburg, and my plan right now is to be the Brownsburg coach for a long time. You know, but in coaching, opportunities do come up that sometimes it's really hard to pass on. So, you know, we'll see where that goes.
Okay. And Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward's dad will be one of your assistants.
Gordon Hayward's dad will be an assistant. You know, he's been pretty good so far in our meetings and things like that. You know, he's fun to be around. And right now we've been talking a lot of Utah Jazz playoff basketball. So, you know, it's just another great perspective for our program.
Is it going to be strange being the boss of the father of one of your former teammates?
I know Gordon's dad pretty well. I had known him already pretty well. So we had already had a pretty good relationship. So I think we'll work really well together.
Yeah, okay. Now, you went to the Final Four in New Orleans this past year. I know you hung out with Rob Hummel and some other guys.
To hang out with Robbie Hummel, Zach Novak, hung out with Draymond Green a little bit, hung out with some guys from some other schools, Mick Hegpath from Belmont, Quinn McDowell from William & Mary. Zach Rosen from University of Penn, who we actually played right before the Final Four. So great group of guys. We had a lot of fun going down there. So it was really cool to get that opportunity.
I think Rob told me that he was walking to the game on Saturday with you and said something like, I may have to go into coaching because I have to find out what it's like to be a part of the Final Four.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. And, you know, Rob and I, we walked and talked a lot while we were down in New Orleans. But, you know, I told him, you know, this was one of the coolest experiences that I have ever seen and ever been in. And I was excited to go watch it from a different view, you know, to sit back in section 100 something and watch the Final Four that I had gotten the opportunity to play in the 2 years previous to that.
Yeah. So when you're out maybe to dinner or just hanging out with Rob Hummel and Draymond Green and these other guys, what do you talk about?
You know, we actually talked about, we compared our schools a lot and how our programs did things the same or differently, whether that was practice, whether that was food, whether that was our teammates. We all have crazy stories that we can tell of people, of teammates, of coaches, you know, crazy things that have happened on campus. So that was just, I mean, when you think about it, it was just a bunch of, you know, 22, 23-year-old guys just kind of sitting back, having a good time, you know, just kind of shooting the breeze and having a good time doing it.
Ronald, I got a theme question. I've asked everybody I've talked to for the show. When you sleep at night, do you have dreams about playing basketball? Do you play basketball in your
all
dreams?
The time.
Yeah.
All the time. You know, especially when I was playing, all those dreams of games and, you know, I might have a dream of the opponent that we play the night before we play him or things like that. Like I can remember having a dream about playing IU and, you know, having a dream about playing in the national championship against Duke and things like that. So I definitely have those basketball dreams.
So like the night before you played in those national championship games, did you dream about playing in the game, that type of thing? Do you remember?
I had actually dreamed about playing in those games before the national championship games, which is kind of crazy, but, you know, I can't really help my dreams. If you could be prepared dream-wise, I was prepared to play the national championship game a few weeks before it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Keith Smart, who hit the game-winning shot for IU in 87, said the night before the game he dreamed that he would hit a game-winning shot in the game. So it's weird. And some guys dream that they play poorly. Like, did you generally play well?
I had some dreams that I did not play very well in.
Yeah.
And I woke up pretty upset, to be honest with you. But usually, you know, my dreams turn out to go in a positive direction for myself and my team.
One-on-One with Ronald Norred continues in a moment. Hey, thanks to Ronald Norred for joining the One-on-One Alumni Club. You know, regardless of how you view the meaning, if any, of tragic events like his father's early death, you have to admire the manner in which he overcame it. It could have left him feeling bitter and hopeless, but he showed the maturity that made him a great player and could make him a great coach. And what a break for Brad Stevens that Western Kentucky's coach left and put Norred back on the recruiting trail. And what a break for Norred that Butler still had a scholarship available so late in the recruiting game. It is a risk for Brownsburg, hiring somebody with no coaching experience to take over its varsity basketball program. Even Bob Knight began his career as a high school JV coach. But then Brownsburg has been having losing seasons lately, so how much risk is there? And for that matter, how much risk is there in hiring somebody like Norred, who comes from a program like Butler's? Now, remember, if you want to hear this or any of the 100-plus conversations with Indiana sports personalities, all you got to do is go to the website at 1070thefan.com, click on shows, click on weekly shows, and click on the One-on-One link. The podcasts are there for you every minute of every day. I can be reached by email at mark@1070thefan.com. And I'll be back next week to do it all over again, right here on 1070 The Fan.
What do you say?